Hello, and welcome back to the Frog Room. In this podcast, I want to update the last audio podcast I did a few weeks ago about the new Viv I've built, the Leaning Tower of Frogs. I want to tell you what's been going on with that and some modifications I've done recently. And I'll also tell you about the frogs that are now living in it. As part of those modifications, I've done quite a lot of research into lighting. So most of this podcast is going to be about lighting alternatives for vivaria, and hopefully you'll find some useful information in there. But before we do that, let me remind you that this podcast, as ever, is brought to you by dendroworld.co.uk, and that everything you need to know about keeping dart frogs is at dendroworld.co.uk. Well, like many people, both in Europe and in North America, I've really been suffering from the heat over the last month or so. Thankfully, here in England, it's cooled off a bit now, and I think it has in most of North America as well, and I guess we're all pretty glad about that. And this hasn't posed too many problems in my frog rooms, although I did lose a number of tinctorious tadpoles, and I think that probably is down to the stress due to overheating. But it has posed me one significant problem. And the major source of heat in my frog room, apart from the sun, of course, is the lighting. And so to combat that, apart from leaving the windows open whenever I can, the answer, of course, is to turn the lights off. And there was a period of 2 weeks when really the lights in my frog room weren't on very much at all. And that's particularly true of the light that I was using over this new Viv, the Leaning Tower of Frogs, that I talked about a couple of podcasts ago. And in that podcast, I talked about this new plastic substrate, EpiWeb, which I was using as a planting substrate on the back of this Viv. Now, I don't feel that the EpiWeb has had a fair test yet, and I think that, as I said previously, I need to report back on that in a year's time to tell you what I really think about it. But what's definitely true is that the plants have not colonized the EpiWeb as fast as I hoped they would. Now, as I said, I don't think this is entirely related to the EpiWeb. The main problem is the lights haven't been on long enough to make plant growth optimal. But it's not clear to me that EpiWeb is the perfect substitute for more traditional panels such as cork bark and fern root. So what I did recently was to add some cocoa baskets. I just bought actually a hanging basket liner made of cocoa fiber, and I just cut some little cone shaped, glued them together with hot glue, and I've added those to the background by sticking them on with hot glue, which works very well. So if you want to stick things to EpiWeb, I do recommend hot glue. Get yourself a glue gun and some hot glue. And I've just used those to plant up some Ficus pimilia, and that does seem to be working quite well. And I'll show you some pictures of that later on in the podcast. So on to lighting then. Now, the measurement of light and light intensity and the efficiency of different lighting systems is quite a complex area. The basic measurement of light is the lumen, although there are plenty of other units as well. So I'm not going to go into too much detail about that. What I'm really interested in, from my point of view, is what's called luminous efficiency. That is the amount of light, in other words, the number of lumens you get per watt of electricity. And by calculating that number, you can obviously compare the efficiency of different forms of lighting. And the reason that's particularly relevant to me at the present time is essentially that watts are heat. And when I give you the numbers that I've found out by looking these up, I hope you'll be as shocked as I was at how inefficient most lighting systems presently are. So basically, the more watts you have, the more heat you have. And in a heat wave that we've had over the last month, this is a huge problem. Now, I thought at first I had a brilliant solution to my lighting problems. And I thought a high-tech solution involving light-emitting diodes, or LEDs, was going to be the answer to all my problems. Well, it turns out that it isn't, and I'll explain why that's the case in just a little while. So what I'd like to do is just spend a while running through different lighting systems, And I'm going to give you some numbers just for purposes of comparison. Now, the measurement of the efficiency of different lighting systems is quite complicated and quite involved, and I'm going to try and simplify it. So if you don't agree with my numbers, please don't email me, because I'm aware that they are very, very approximate numbers, but they do give you a feeling for how efficient different kinds of light are, and hopefully they'll be as helpful to you as they are to me in making decisions about how you light your vivaria. Not including natural daylight, and let me say here, I think if your vivarium is big enough, and you do need a big viv to operate this successfully, there's probably no substitute for natural daylight. But most of us don't have the luxury of being able to rely on that, at least not for all of our lighting, although a lot of people have vivaria that get some natural daylight. But leaving that aside, starting with the most old-fashioned form of lighting, the incandescent light bulb. Now, my guess is that not many people use regular light bulbs to light vivaria, and there are very good reasons for that. So let me give you some numbers. So the basic number we're going to start with here is 15. So on average, an incandescent light bulb produces 15 lumens of light per watt of electricity. So again, this is quite complicated. It varies depending on the power of the light bulb. So for example, a 15 watt light bulb only produces 7 lumens per watt, but a 300 watt light bulb produces 20 lumens per watt. But on average, most light bulbs that you would use to light a domestic room, you're talking about something like 15 lumens per watt. Now, the really shocking figure is that typically 5% of the energy that you put into a light bulb in the form of electricity is converted into light. And that means 95% winds up as heat. So apart from considerations such as the spectrum of the light, which most people don't like for lighting vivaria because it's quite a warm reddish light, that terrible energy conversion and the amount of heat generated make incandescent light bulbs a pretty bad choice for lighting vivs. Now, when I was deciding originally how to light this new vivarium, the real problem I faced was the shape of the viv. Because it's only 12 inches square, but it's 3 feet tall, this presents a problem. For a normal vivarium, I wouldn't consider using anything other than fluorescent lighting, but it's just not possible to find an efficient fluorescent system that fits on the top of a viv with this very small footprint. So the decision I eventually made was to go for halogen lighting. And this is in the form of a simple halogen spot lamp. And the nice thing about this is it casts a nice, fairly narrow beam. And so it's ideally suited to the shape of the vivarium. And I went for a 50 watt halogen bulb. And typically, you get something around 20 lumens per watt for these halogen bulbs. So they're a little bit more efficient than incandescent light bulbs, but they are not particularly efficient. And you're still talking something like 90% of the energy that you put into them being converted into heat. And that has been my problem for the past few weeks in the temperatures that we've experienced. The halogen bulb doesn't really put out that much light. 50 watts is not, at this efficiency, is not a particularly large amount of light. And yet it is a large amount of heat, so I've had to turn it off for far too frequently. So the halogen solution didn't work very well. So this is the point at which I had my bright idea, which I thought at the time, which was light-emitting diodes. So this is what kicked this whole podcast off. I did quite a lot of research into LED lights to see whether they were a viable alternative. Now, I'm not going to go into the technicalities of how LED or indeed any of the other forms of lighting work. You can look that up for yourself if you want to. I'm just going to go into the practicalities of using them. Now, when I started looking at LEDs, it was under the impression that they were very, very efficient forms of lighting. In other words, lots of lumen per watt and not very much heat. And it's true that for the most modern forms of LED, they are efficient. They are among the most efficient lighting systems. So there are LEDs in existence that give you over 100 lumens per watt, but they have two problems. The first is because the unit is so small, it putting that kind of power through the unit produces a lot of heat, and they need to be connected to big and quite cumbersome heat sinks to deal with that problem. But the major problem is that these modern units are very expensive, certainly more expensive than I'd consider paying for vivarium lighting, so they're not really on. Now, there are plenty of other LEDs out there these days, and the whole thing about LEDs, of course, is they don't use very much power, so they don't produce very much light. So to get around that problem, what the manufacturers are doing are producing these cluster-type fittings, grouping a group of LEDs together in a bulb which produces effectively a confined spotlight-type effect. And this initially was very attractive to me because this, of course, as I've said, would suit the shape of this Viv, and it also fits in the existing fitting that I've got. However, when you dig around and you look into the efficiency of this, typical LEDs that are on the market at the present time at reasonable prices only produce about 25 lumens per watt of electricity. So that's a little bit more efficient, but not very efficient. So if I went for a 30 watt cluster LED, I wouldn't be actually producing any more light than I am with my present 50 watt halogen bulb because of the reduction in power. Yes, it would be a lot cooler, but it's not going to help my plant growth because it's still not producing that much light. So regrettably, after finding this out, I abandoned the idea of LED lighting. And I'm sure this is going to come in the future, but it's going to be a few years yet before it's a viable solution to a lot of lighting problems. So carrying on up the efficiency scale, the next thing we come to are mercury vapor lamps. So we've got up to about 25 watts per lumens per watt for a typical domestic LED. Mercury vapor lamps produce something in the region of 40 lumens per watt. So they're about twice as efficient, or nearly twice as efficient. So that's not bad. This was a possible solution, but I have used mercury vapor lamps in the past over aquaria, and I have to admit, I was quite frightened at the amount of heat these relatively high power lamps produce. There aren't many very low power mercury vapor bulbs around, and they produce a lot of light, but they produce a heck of a lot of heat as well. So under the heat wave conditions I was suffering at the time when I replanned my lighting, it really wasn't a viable proposition. So I'm afraid mercury vapor went out of the window as well. So now we're getting into fluorescent territory, and this is where it starts to get interesting from a vivarium point of view. So from an efficiency point of view, the first place we come to are compact fluorescent lamps. And there are a number of different types of compact fluorescent lamp, and certainly a number of different formats that require different fittings. But essentially you can divide them into two types. There are types of lamp which plug into a fitting and have a remote ballast, which is needed for a starter. And there are lamps where the ballast is included as part of the lamp itself, so they're just one-piece units, and they just plug into a conventional fitting, such as you would have on your ceiling. And the advantage of these compact fluorescent lamps is that they are more efficient. So we're now talking something like 50 lumens per watt, so we've gone up a fair amount. And I'm showing now in the artwork viewer on iTunes a picture of one of these lamps, and this is in fact the solution that I finally went for. This is a 30 watt compact fluorescent lamp, and it's a spiral design, so it's quite compact in shape. The best thing about this lamp is it's had a nice color spectrum. It's a 6400 Kelvin color spectrum, which is pretty much a daylight color spectrum. It's not a warm reddish color like some of the lamps, Some of the regular compact fluorescents, it's a nice colour for lighting a vivarium, and I'm actually very pleased with the colour of this lamp. Now, if you work it out, 50 lumens per watt, 30 watt lamp, that means I'm getting around 1,500 lumens out of this lamp, and obviously these are all very approximate features. Now, previously, with the halogen lamp I was using, a 50 watt lamp producing 20 lumens per watt, that was only giving me 1,000 lumens. So what I've done is I've got a 50% increase in the amount of light over the VIV, but at only 60% of the wattage, so I've cut the heat considerably. And of course, I'm actually getting a lot more light because, in addition to cutting the heat, I can leave the light on for much longer, which is what the plants really need in order to grow. Now, for you chaps in the UK, I've included a link to the company that I bought the lamp from. This is BLT Direct. I've bought a number of products from BLT Direct recently, and I just recommend them because I'm very pleased with both their prices and their service. If you click on the link in the iTunes Artwork Viewer, you can see quite a lot of technical details that they have on their website about this particular lamp. So people elsewhere in the world, in North America, I'm sure you'll be able to find a similar product. But you Brits, BLT Direct, good place. So finally, that brings us to fluorescent lighting, regular fluorescent lighting, which is of course the normal choice for the vast majority of vivaria. Let me just say a little bit first about T numbers, because I get asked about that quite frequently. People are quite confused. The T number in front of a fluorescent lamp represent eighths of an inch. So for example, T12 lamps are 12 eighths of an inch in diameter, that's to say 1.5 inches in diameter. A T8 lamp is 1 inch in diameter, 8/8, and a T5 lamp is 5/8 in diameter. Now, T12 lamps are going out of fashion. There aren't as many of these around these days as there used to be. Mostly people tend to be using T8 lamps, and we have there an efficiency of something like 80 lumens per watt, so we've gone up quite a lot. And what we're at now is still not as impressive as you might think from that number. We're still only at approximately 20% of the input energy being converted into light and 80% being converted into heat. Although that heat, some of that heat at least, is of course usually in a remote ballast rather than in the tube itself, and therefore doesn't necessarily go directly into the VIV, but it might well heat your room up for you, and it certainly wastes a lot of energy. Now, T5 fluorescent lamps I've always thought of as being very, very efficient because they are noticeably brighter than T8 lamps. But when you actually look at the numbers, it turns out that they're only slightly more efficient than T8 lamps. So whereas you're getting something like 80 lumens per watt for a typical T8 lamp, you're getting about 90 lumens per watt, roughly, for a T5 lamp. So why do they look so much brighter? Well, the reason for that is because they're higher powered. They are slightly more efficient, but they are higher powered lamps. So, for example, a 36-inch or 34-inch or 30-inch or whatever the size is, I can't quite remember, T5 lamp is 39 watts compared with something like 20-odd watts for a T8 lamp of the same length. Okay, so they are more efficient, but they're just more powerful, so they're producing more light. So that produces an interesting comparison. If this vivarium that I've been struggling with were set up in the conventional way, horizontally, I would have no doubts whatsoever what I would use to light it. I would use one single 39-watt T5 fitting. And at 90 lumens per watt, that would give me something like 3,500 lumens. So that would give me nearly three times the amount of light that I'm using on the VIV in the vertical setting. So it's perhaps no great surprise that the plants aren't doing as well. Although it has to be said, there are fluorescent lights adjacent to this VIV, and it does pick up some additional lighting from the room in addition to the light that's dedicated to it. Now, I've been using T5 lamps on my Viv in the past, on several of my Vivs in my frog room for the past year, and I do have to recommend them. I don't intend to rip out all of my old lighting in my frog room and replace it with T5 because it's not that big an advance over T8. But certainly when I'm doing any new lighting fittings on conventional shaped Vivaria these days, I wouldn't consider anything other than T5 lighting. Okay, so we've gone now all the way from the rubbishy old 5 or 15 watts per lumens per watt incandescent bulbs all the way up through to 90 watts, pushing 100 lumens per watt at the most efficient fluorescent systems. And the system I'm using, the compact fluorescent system, is somewhere in the middle. Now, one more important point. Whatever type of lighting system you're using, you can improve the efficiency by as much as 50% by using an efficient reflector. Now, the most efficient reflectors you can buy are highly polished metal reflectors, essentially mirrors. And of course, for conventional fluorescent fittings, it's easy to buy those. They're designed for aquaria. You can buy them and either attach them to a surface or they clip onto the lamp itself. And I do recommend that you use those to get the maximum bang for your buck, if you like, with fluorescent lighting. With compact fluorescent, of course, it's a little bit more difficult. You can't buy off-the-shelf reflectors. So I've fallen back here on my old standard that I've used for many years, and that is white plastic rain guttering. And a white surface is almost as efficient as a polished metal surface in terms of acting as a reflector. So I'm getting the maximum light input into my Viv by using a reflector, and that's important to remember. The other nice thing about the rain gutter, particularly in the compact fluorescent bulb format, is because it's relatively short and the ends are open, it allows for relatively good cooling, a good airflow, so the bulb runs cooler. And that's, of course, helpful to the bulb, and it preserves the life of the bulb. So whatever kind of lighting you use, spend some time working on a decent reflector as well as worrying about the bulbs. Now, after all of that, the good news is that this vivarium finally has some frogs in it. It's taken a while, but finally we're there. And eventually, after spending a while deciding which species was most appropriate to use the vertical space in this viv, I was very glad to receive a trio of juvenile Dendrobates pumilio, and this is the blackleg morph from John Frost, who's bred them himself. And I think he now deserves the title of Britain's leading pumilio breeder. So thanks very much, John, for these superb frogs. And I'm just showing you in the artwork viewer now a couple of pictures of these guys enjoying the viv. So they're still young and they're still finding their way around, so I don't want anybody emailing me asking to be put on a waiting list for froglets, okay? It's going to be a while before that happens, but they look good. They use all of the vertical space in the viv, and I'm very, very grateful to have them. So that's pretty much all of the frog news for this podcast, but I just want to spend a few seconds before the end of the podcast telling you about something else. Now, much as I'd like to be able to support my family as a professional frog podcaster, I'm afraid it just doesn't work out that way. So, like most people, I have to have a day job. And I haven't talked about my day job on the podcast before, but I'll let you into a secret now. I'm actually a microbiologist. And for a while, I've been working on a podcast, a microbiology podcast, which is intended not just for scientists, but for the general public at large, and explaining current issues in microbiology in a nice, accessible way that everyone can understand. So I thought I would just mention it here. You may be interested in it. If you click on the link in the iTunes viewer, you can visit the website, which is at microbiologybites.wordpress.com. And if you think it sounds interesting at all, feel free to sign up to the Microbiology Bites podcast. They're real short podcasts, not long and rambling like this one. And hopefully you'll enjoy that as well. And that's all for this podcast. I'm going off on holiday for a couple of days, so I hope you have a good time. I hope your frogs do well, and I'll talk to you again soon.